Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
This episode is brought to you by Noom. Forget one-size-fits-all diets. With Noom, you get a personalized weight loss plan that's tailored to your lifestyle. No food is off limits. Enjoy your favorites while discovering healthier habits. Noom's users love the flexible approach, blending psychology and biology to help you lose weight in a way that's sustainable for you. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
And a welcome to you, spectacular human being. This is the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 222. Come check out the Nerdist Podcast live at San Diego Comic-Con, Friday, July 13th at the Balboa Theater. We also have a bunch of other dates coming up on the Nerdist Podcast. We are coming to Texas later in July. Perhaps you've heard of Houston and Dallas. We'll be there. So go to Nerdist.com/calendar. Click on the links there. You can get tickets and come see us perform live. We'll do our show. We'll do some stand-up. We'll do a panel. We'll do some comments. And then we'll hug people afterwards and sign stuff. So check it out. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Bunk, the television show on IFC, which is right after Comedy Bang Bang. It airs at 10:30 p.m. On Fridays. This is where comedians come to play. It's improv comics play for insane prizes, non-charitable causes. Comics are armed with nothing but wit, their brains, their comedy glands throbbing. Some of the categories on the show, shame that puppy, give that bitch some arms, unstamp that tramp. Challenges include making up songs on the spot, completing drawings, creating sculptures. It's just a super fun fake game show. So you really, really, really should watch. First of all, you should watch Comedy Bang Bang and then stick around the following half hour for Bunk, Fridays, 10:30 p.m. on IFC. Hey guys, let's get you into this podcast. This is my dear old friend, Marilyn Rice Cub. She's not old. I mean, and that was a qualifier for friendship, that our friendship is old. Not that it's old and stale. It's just older than someone that I've only known for a few years. I've known Marilyn for, oh my God, like a decade at least. Maybe probably longer, actually. No, definitely longer. So it's unforgivable that she hasn't been on the podcast until now. Unforgivable. Bad host, Chris Hardwick. Oh, I'll show you. But she is delightful. And it was a real pleasure to have her on. And it's funny to me that people, when she got famous from 24, and this whole swath of people then discover, like, oh, she's also a comedian who is funny. So it was really, really, really great to finally have her on. Long, long, long overdue. So here it is, Nerdist Podcast, episode number 222 with Marilyn Rice Cub.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
So Bruce Campbell was cool.
Yeah, extremely cool. And I took a picture with him. And like I was just being real fan dorky, where I was like, gonna put my arm around him and smile like an asshole. And he's like, oh, no, come on, we're both tall. Let's do like a buddy cop poster, a buddy cop movie poster. And we went back to back with our arms crossed.
Oh wow!
Yeah. And then I said, yeah, this is the cover for our cop show, where you're like a hardened veteran and I'm an alcoholic, and we'll call it Chin and Tonic.
How did that go over?
He cracked up.
Marilyn Rice Cub.
Hey, what's going on?
Get on the microphone.
Hey,
there.
Girl.
We're recording.
I didn't know who Bruce Campbell was.
Oh, but he's the guy from Army of Darkness and Evil Dead. And Evil Dead.
You probably remember Briscoe County Jr.
The yep. He's on show Burn Notice.
The show on Fox, the network that you were on.
They don't care about me. I don't care about them.
Oh. Whoa. Sounds like you got some stuff to work
Bruce
out, man.
Bruce Campbell's birthday is my birthday, and he's from Royal Oak.
Michigan.
He's from Royal Oak. Michigan. We performed in Royal Oak.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding, Fox. I love you. Please hire me again sometime if you decide to.
Again.
I'll try to be good.
You guys have the same birthday.
Yeah.
What are the odds of that? Do you want headphones or do you not like
aren't
headphones?
Like 1 in 30 or something like that.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all right.
Oh, that's nice.
Isn't that nice?
So soft.
Now you can hear
that's
everything.
Sexual.
Hey, Mary Lynn.
Hey, what's up?
I'm inside your head now, Mary Lynn Rice.
I didn't know where that was going.
What? I am so glad you're finally on the podcast.
Me too. What's happening with you?
Oh, stuff. Well, she just catch up.
Much?
What's happening
nothing
to you,
much?
Chris?
What happened to you, Chris?
What happened?
You've become like 50 people and 50 shows.
Well, you know, I just...
I hope your floor is made of diamonds. And you have a lot of...
It's cubic zirconia, but it's still pretty impressive.
I don't need love. You know, occasionally I cut my feet on my diamond floor, but other than that, it's worth it. They're very expensive wounds.
Have them polished. You'll be fine.
You wake up like Tony Robbins every morning, walking on diamonds instead of coal.
That's right.
It doesn't hurt.
Great. Mind over matter.
It feels great.
I used to live in a 400 square foot apartment. Now I cut my feet on diamonds.
Money over matter.
That's right. I think that's how it
money
works.
Money before people.
Never.
Always people.
Oh. Mm. Mary Lynn, we've known each other for many, many, many years.
I know. That's why I'm trying to understand what's going on with you now.
Well, because I feel like drinking.
I did stop drinking. Mary Lynn remembers. I wasn't sure if I was going to bring this up. There was a
leave it to this one.
There was a time.
You didn't even say anything. You don't even have to.
The year was like 2001 maybe, and I totally hit on Mary Lynn. Asked her out. I asked you out at a show, I think.
I love that you remember the year.
I don't remember. Maybe I might
be
wrong.
That's right.
You had just broken up with a musician type.
Right. So that was just post 9/11.
For
well,
you.
No,
your that 9/11. Was your 9/11. Yeah. Yeah.
Personal 9/11.
Yeah. That was your personal 9/11. And
was at a coffee shop show.
It was at a coffee shop show. Yes.
Right by the New Art Theater.
I remember right off Sawtelle. I remember the street. And
I'm seeing diamonds and butterflies right now as I look at you.
And I was like, I had always had a little bit of a crush, a little bit of a crush. Loved Girls Guitar Club.
That's a staged persona, Chris. You don't know anything about the real me.
Because you didn't give me a chance.
Here, this is the reason you're on the podcast, Mary Lynn.
I bring on girls who wouldn't go out with me.
That's why Mary Romano just left.
It's sort of like High Fidelity, but you know, at the time I was a fucking mess, and I was like, hey, we should go out, or you want to go out? And you were like, well, let me think about it.
Was your speech always slurred then?
Because yes,
every story,
yeah, constantly.
Is that true?
What
did you slur?
I don't know. It's hard to know because when you're drinking all the time, you have this idea in your head of what you're putting out into the world, and it's probably not accurate with what is actually being put out into the world.
I'll tell you what it sounded like. It sounded like a very tired guy with a lot of ideas that he had to get across. Like, hey, you know what we should do?
So like Tom Hulse in Parenthood?
Yeah.
Love him.
Yeah, we really got to go. Now.
And then we talk a couple days later and you go, look, I appreciate that I can't go out with you. I just got out of a relationship and things are, you know, I'm just trying to adjust to that.
Just
and
trying
you were
to figure myself out
very,
right now.
Very sweet about it. You're very sweet about it.
Yeah, it's weird because probably I spent the next 2 to 3 years having my most drinking and drug filled time, which is weird that I would turn you down.
Well, because the problem
was that we had gone out. What would have happened?
I don't know. Because what
neither of you would be here
leaving Las Vegas.
the way that it
the universe was resting
because of the period that the way we were both in is that I gave you time to think about it, and what should have happened was. We were after a show. We should have been hanging out, and then 2 o'clock in the morning, just drunkenly made out.
Yeah,
like that's how that would have played out. But because it was
a fully lit coffee shop, nobody in the audience.
There wasn't anyone there, And it was like, it's like going through, it's sort of like why people pirate things. Well, I went through the official channels and that didn't work. So that's why I have to, you know, pirate makeout sessions at 2:30 in the morning at bars that are shut down.
I'd ask out a girl like I was a 14-year-old boy.
Why are you yelling at me? I'm not angry. It's super romantic.
I'm not angry anymore.
It happens like that.
I just have an ear infection and I can't hear well.
So I never got to fully apologize for, like, just kind of, I don't know. I always felt like, I was kind of a mess, of course. Like, why, you know, I was a mess. So I don't know. I don't know why I felt the need to apologize for that, but I'm sorry.
I don't think you really do.
No, okay. I'm glad you're just trying
to, like, put a button on that discussion.
Jonah
so
and I have been waiting for that apology, so thank
you're
you.
You're not getting it.
Edit that out.
You're not getting it. But I don't really actually know that much about your background and where you grew up and where you started. Did you come down with the San Francisco comedy scene that migrated south?
Yes, I did. You're Blaine Kapatch.
Mm-hmm.
The world's
Jeremy
Blaine
Kramer.
Kapatch.
The world's Blaine. Yeah, I was doing performance art in San Francisco. You know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then people were laughing at me.
Wasn't that the same situation with Jeremy Kramer, though?
Is it?
You can say that
is
was
performance art?
Yeah.
His life is performance
art.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I was hanging out with Jeremy Kramer a lot in San Francisco. And they're like, we're doing shows in L.A. And I thought, cool, because I had finished art school and had no reason to be there. If I would have stayed in San Francisco, I would have been working at a coffee shop, living in a storefront and doing like performance art pieces in a storefront. So I didn't come to L.A. like, oh, I'm going to get work. I just thought, I need to be in a new place and see new stuff. And I was really just couldn't stop performing. Like my painting classes, I would just like start talking, which is weird because I just had this like urge to express myself, but it wasn't really my personality. I just had a need.
Did you grow up in San Francisco?
No, I'm from Michigan. And then I was going to art school in Michigan, and this friend of mine said she was going to San Francisco for the semester. And I was like, I want to do that. And then I went to San Francisco and I never went back.
Interesting.
And then there were lots of, the comedy clubs were closing. So there were, a lot of open mic poetry rooms, mm-hmm. which I just really loved that. And, you know, when you like, I had no money, so you'd get like a huge burrito in the Mission and just have it for like all day. And then by the time I went to the poetry reading, I'd drink like a half a beer. And I'd be like, oh, my God, like, I'm so wasted. And then I'd watch, like, you know, like the transvestite from the street read her poetry. And those rooms were so great because I just loved, like, watching a person by themselves on stage doing a monologue of whatever, you know, whatever their heart desired. And then I would see just, like, random people like Patton would come through or Blaine. And I was like, oh, like, because they were so polished, but they were doing stuff that they couldn't do in comedy clubs. So I just was like fascinating to me.
So you never even said like it was never like a goal to set out like I'm gonna do comedy. It was just sort of a
it was just
sort of the product of what was
of people accidentally laughing at me.
Yeah,
and I remember I was doing like I tried to do like poetry slams, but I don't even know what I was doing. I would just like read nonsense, like words that sound interesting to me because I was in art school, and then like people would laugh at my persona, and I thought, well, that's interesting. And I remember telling this older poet guy from Humboldt, California, that I was going to try to do comedy. And he was like, why? Like, he was so bummed out that I wasn't doing poetry.
Sell out.
And what I couldn't say out loud was, because people are laughing at me and I don't know why. So I thought I'd give that a go. Oh, but I forgot. As one of my performance art pieces, because when you go to art school, especially in San Francisco, you know, when you're doing sculpture with no materials, like beyond sculpture, and it becomes performance art. One of my pieces was going in a comedy club, and the guy I was dating at the time was trying to do comedy, and I read all these punchlines that made no sense off scraps of paper and showed that as my performance art piece. And I remember the teacher, like my friends were like, oh, it's brilliant. And my teacher was like, yeah, take an acting class. And that was
But that's what's so weird to me about
good advice.
The idea of an art school feels weird. It was sort of like how I majored in philosophy, and I always was confused by how papers about philosophy were graded,
right?
If, unless it was like logic, which was very mathematical, and I can understand there was a right and a wrong answer, the right and wrong way to do it. But with art, how do you do a project and they go, that's not it? You're like, but it's an expression of, how can you say what is and right. isn't?
Well, I had another teacher, a few teachers that were really cool in that regard, and you would have discussions about why or why not that would be a piece. And then there's the other part of art school where you just learn your foundations. You know, you learn your reading and writing and your reading and writing, your drawing
and arithmetic
and your 3D art and your, you know, how to do the human figure. And then in the later classes, you're supposed to get all conceptual about that shit.
Were you with the Art Academy of San Francisco?
No,
the Academy of Arts or
Art San Francisco Art Institute, which was right next to Lombard Street on Chestnut.
Okay.
That beautiful building. Did you ever go in there and it overlooks the water? It kind of looks like a church.
I've never been in there, but that's right next to Cobbs.
Yeah.
Like right down Lombard Street.
I never went to Cobbs for some reason because I had an aversion to real comedy clubs, which I've just now started doing real comedy clubs. I have. What the hell?
Well, you know, I think when we're younger, there's the sort of like, man, that's bullshit. That's the old structure. And they're fucking telling you what you're supposed to. You kind of have this, you know, you're all young and rebellious and you just want to fucking tear the buildings down. And then when you get older, you're like, you know, there is actually a craft to joke writing and, and making, you know, and then you start to appreciate that part of it. So maybe that just means we're all getting older. But I think that.
Fuck you, old man.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. I think when you're younger, it's just easier to do that because the actual joke writing or actual, like, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's fucking harder.
Yeah, it is.
Ow. My headphones just came off. No, man, this just blew my mind.
Did you ever go to the Brainwash Cafe in San Francisco? They used to have a comedy night.
No.
It popped into my mind.
No, I didn't.
Okay. Talk to you later.
that just didn't last long at all. This did not last long.
Well, I was just trying to get your, like, where kind of places you went.
Well, I didn't really perform that much in San Francisco until, like, 5 or 6 years ago. I didn't catch up with that scene that migrated south, the Largo, what ultimately became the Largo scene. I didn't really fall in with that until, like, 99 or 2000.
Right.
98, 99, 2000. So that scene had well established itself in Los Angeles by that point. Everyone had been out here. I mean, I started watching, you know, I went to the Uncabaret shows in like 92 or 93 with a very young, long-haired Blaine Capatch and a very young David Cross and a very young Margaret Cho and Posehn when he had his crazy long, you know, crazy long Ludo hair.
Did you see that picture that someone just posted recently of it's a Baron Capatch, Patton?
I saw that.
Yeah, it's like black and white. It looks like they're in like a Jesus and Mary Chain cover band.
That picture is in Laura the Milligan. Green room of Cobbs.
Oh, okay.
That's right.
Where it
yeah, Milligan's, yeah.
Is that Dan Dion? Did Dan Dion shoot that?
Dan, yeah.
That is a fucking amazing picture. To me, it looks like a Jesus and Mary Chain cover or Tears for Fears or something. It's just, it's very, and everyone's just young and just full of fucking.
I know, it's weird. I get kind of angry when I look at it. Those young fools.
It's weird too, to look at it, though, because Greg Barron, the way he dresses now matches more of the picture of then, when then he's just wearing like a polo shirt. This looks like a beefy dude.
What was your plan? Did you have any kind of game plan, or you just kind of wanted to, when you started realizing like, oh, maybe I have this kind of inherent comedy thing, I'm going to just do that. Like, did you have any sort of direction?
No, I just wanted to perform and had no idea why. And my brain, I couldn't put like a story together, and I would always berate myself like in the 90s year after year. I was like, you should really do a sketch packet, but I never wrote sketches. I never really, you know, I watched the people that I liked, all the people that you just mentioned, but I didn't study comedy. I just was like, oh, these are the people that I like, and this is the time of my life where I like going to shows and I like doing shows. I remember Paul F. Tompkins and Jay Johnston at one particular show in Hollywood backstage. They were rehearsing this like sort of elaborate like back and forth. And I was like, you guys are rehearsing? It was just beyond me. For whatever reason, I was just irate. I would have scraps of paper and I'd like improvise. And I don't know what I was doing. And I can remember, like, the other day I was driving down La Brea, that place that used to be the Lava Lounge.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, like, all these, like, memories of, like, just old performances of going on stage and being like, what do you guys want from me? And people, like, getting a laugh off of that. But I was just using my own neuroses and need to, like, expel energy and get attention and not really knowing what the interface was with the audience.
That's really interesting. That's a really interesting approach, because I think particularly young writers who are trying to figure out who they are, there's sort of there's a translation filter between what's in their head or what they're trying to express, and they go, how do I get this? How do I present this to the audience in a way that they will understand, or how do I
if
make
you're
them laugh?
They say, oh, I have this idea.
Yeah, how exactly. Do how do I? Oh, I really want to. Man, this needs to be funny. There needs to be a turn here. But yours is a very arty approach, which is just like, I am the. This is the purest expression of what I'm feeling in this moment.
Oh, you just totally made something make sense to me in a new way.
Time machine.
When did you start? How did Girls Guitar Club come about?
Karen Kilgariff was, she had learned a couple chords. I think Andy Kindler taught her, if I'm remembering right, and they learned a Lucinda Williams song called Concrete and Barbed Wire.
Okay.
And we were just hanging out, and she was like, oh, I just learned this. Like, you got to learn this with me. It's so awesome. And so we just spent the entire night learning a G and a C, which is one of, like, the hardest changes, I guess. I still don't really know. When you're, like,
index
changing chords.
All the way down.
And so we just, for, like, 6 hours, played, you know, those two chords over and over. And she had learned with him, like, how to sing and play the chords. And then we were, like, children. I believe, like, David Cross was there, and I can forget who else the first time. We were like, hey... Maybe Danny Sobias, like, hey, we just learned this song. Okay, wait. Okay, we're going to play this song for you now. And, we could, like, barely play it. And then it was a couple days after that that we thought we're going to go to an open mic music night, which was at Genghis Cohen.
Oh, yeah, on La Brea.
And
yeah,
they had, like, pews, and it's, like, super, super dark and super quiet. And the singer-songwriters take themselves really seriously. And we're like, okay, we're up next. And we went up, and the thing, you know, when you go to play music and we didn't know what we were doing. So we just immediately froze, because you're doing a show, you know, and you can't just like you can barely do it in the first place. So we both were like, and we started talking back and forth and making each other laugh. And then that was really fun. So that became our act.
Did it play okay with that group? Were they like, they're not taking this seriously?
It kind of played okay. Like, I probably, we had, you know, 5 or 10 friends there that laughed. And I don't even remember if we got the song out. We probably did get part of it. Yeah.
Did Girls Guitar Club do a pilot? Did you do a show? I feel like I remember seeing you on.
We did a short film that was 12 minutes long.
It was
directed
a short
by
film.
Ruben Fleischer. Do you know Ruben?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From Zombieland. And that was the first thing he ever directed.
Yeah.
And it was his idea, and he was like, I remember he was just like biting his nails. He's like, oh, you want to own it? And he was like so shy and just like a comedy fan, and said that he wanted to do a short film with us.
Was not E from the Eels in that as well?
Yeah.
And you're in a record, you're in a store, and that's right.
And
I remember
Nick Swartzen.
Mm-hmm. This was like, when was this? Like 2000 maybe?
Yeah. Yeah. If not earlier. Yeah, 2000.
And then,
12 years ago.
And then at a certain point, was it just, did you both get busy? Or I'm always curious to hear, like, how, because it's very difficult when you have to rely, when two people have to rely on each other to make the thing.
Yeah.
That always unnerves me a little bit, because I'm like, oh, you know.
Are you projecting hard and firm on her?
No, not at all. Mike is the easiest person in the world to work with, but there's still always that, oh, if that guy gets sick, we can't perform. Or if I get sick, he can't perform, and then there's no show, you know? So I'd like the dynamic of having more than one person to make a thing work always unnerves me a little bit.
Yeah, we kind of imploded. She's probably the only person to this day that I've fought as much as I did, because I tend to get very in arguments, like, probably cold and, like, either sarcastic or just really reasonable and quiet and meek. But I almost never fight back. And she's very verbal and would, like, we just, yeah. And so we would always like go through stuff and then be okay and go through stuff and be okay. And then one day it was just not okay.
Typical rock and roll story.
You know?
That's how it happens. I don't know how bands stay together for, you know, 5, 10, 20, 25 years.
Travel separately and then do the show.
That's it, huh?
Yeah.
They don't socialize.
Yeah.
But something happens after that. 20 years. Yeah. That's a little outrageous.
Move on.
Yeah, all four. You know?
I get it, Bono.
Are you listening, you two?
Yeah, they're all listening.
Yeah.
Oh, you think so? Hey, guys.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. What's been going on?
So, when
one,
did...
How did... Not the same.
The Edge, that's a crazy name, huh?
Hey.
Carrie.
The Edge is a crazy name.
Tell you though, beautiful day. It's a good song.
Listen...
Have you seen Rock of Ages?
No. I haven't seen Rock of Ages. No, not at all. It's just, I haven't... it's really not a sore subject.
I don't mean even sore subject. Do you feel it inside?
I feel... You know, I would be lying if I were to say I didn't feel something weird about it. And there is literally no reason for me to feel weird about it. But the only way... For people who are listening, I'm sure you've heard me blab about this a million times. But jeez. I was in the original Rock of Ages.
You're like Howard Stern and AGT.
Yeah,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You won't shut up about it.
I'm curious to see the movie to see if any of the jokes I wrote for the show survived to the movie. But
did you write a lot of jokes for the show?
Yeah, because they would, you know, we were doing all these shows and they just let me, and you know, Chris Lorenzo wrote a super fun script, but you know, just doing different shows every night.
Yeah.
They never tempered me on like, I was just improvising jokes and some of them worked. And
you were so great in that.
Oh, you're sweet. It was fun. It was super fun. And they offered for me to go do it off Broadway and I couldn't do it because I was working. And
did you do it a little bit tour with it or never?
No, we did a week of shows. Like we did 2 years of shows in Los Angeles and then we did a week in Vegas because they were trying to sell the show to Vegas. And I mean, I don't think I would have gone to do the show in Vegas, but I went to help them try to sell the show. And it didn't play well in Vegas. Because everyone in the audience was like from the Triassic era. I mean, it was like the oldest like people on Rascals. I would never have even gotten the references or the songs. I don't know why they were there, but and then it didn't work. And then you know they managed to get that show up and going. And they sank millions of dollars into that show. So I am thrilled because everyone who worked on the show was awesome, but for some reason. Like the movie or like everything, it almost feels like, oh, this girl that you used to go out with got really famous and this other guy's fucking her now. And it's just sort of, I don't know why. It just feels a little weird to
me.
Katie
Holmes?
Yep. That's right. That's exactly what I was getting at.
Nice math. Did that
nice relationship math. So I have not seen it. I probably will see it. I certainly don't feel any like, oh, how come Tom Cruise got the part and I didn't? There's
right.
literally none of that.
Yeah.
But it's just that the show was very special to me when we did it in L.A. And I know the Broadway version changed a little bit and it became a little more mainstreamy. And so I just haven't really warmed up to it 100% yet. That's totally my fault. I'm sure the show's great. I mean, everyone who worked on it was awesome.
I just completely divorced from all that. Just looking at the billboard, like, what the that Tom Cruise? You can't stop him.
You cannot stop him. Someone
he'll tell you what he looks like, this, and what he's like, this, and what parts he can play.
This blew my mind. We were
can't stop him. Yeah. Amazing.
I'm 50, but I look like this.
We were on. I did an Epic Mealtime shoot last night with Harley and the guys, and one of the guys from Epic Mealtime was saying, "Think about this." Tom Cruise is the same age that Wilford Brimley was when he did Cocoon.
Whoa.
And I'm like, oh, fuck.
That's amazing.
That's not. That
Wilford Brimley was 50 when he did Cocoon,
okay,
and Tom Cruise is about to turn 50.
Okay, I don't think that's
so
much.
Excuse me, I have to go join Scientology.
Yeah. I don't think that's so much a thing on Tom Cruise. I think
Wilford Brimley.
Wilford Brimley, like, aged horribly.
He does have the diabetes.
Oh, diabetes.
The diabetes. Yeah.
Well, when you're half man, half walrus, it's hard to
it's
really...
It's very difficult.
You know, when you're out of the water all the time,
and
you dry
the,
out.
And the sun, it, like, it really yeah. saps your skin.
He didn't age horribly. He aged differently.
Well, it's just that he aged quickly and then just stayed that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was born with the handlebar mustache.
Yeah, I think Tom Cruise has sort of stayed...
Yeah.
This is how he will look.
I mean, there's
forever.
No way that Tom Cruise has not had any work done, but it look whatever he's had done
is amazing.
Is amazing. Yeah. And it does not look like what typically happens when guys get work done, which is oh, that guy, did someone put doll eyes in that man? Because there's just a lot of weirdness here. But with Tom Cruise, he looks fucking amazing.
Well, he takes star supplements, you know, stardust supplements, where he just...
You can afford those.
Yeah. Series?
Yes, exactly.
What's going to be funny is that it really probably is just as simple as like, well, if you don't eat a lot of processed sugar and chemicals, you probably age better, you know? Yeah. But most people are like, what can I inject in my eyeballs?
Yeah.
So, but it's hard. I mean, it's hard.
I'm sure he has a lot of time to just, you know, work out every day, you know?
Maybe he does.
I'd imagine so. Yeah. As a, like a big time actor guy.
And you progressively have to marry younger women.
He makes the time.
Okay. You start with Mimi Rogers. Well, then you go to Nicole Kidman. And then you go to
Katie Holmes.
You know what I heard?
So right now, someone on iCarly is the future. Yeah. Mrs. Tom Cruise. Yeah.
Carly herself.
I read an article on Eyes Wide Shut, the last Kubrick movie. Yes. Where he originally, when he started trying to put the movie together, he wanted Steve Martin to play the lead role instead of Tom Cruise, and he wanted it to be like kind of a comedic farce, like a sex comedy.
No way.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, he thought it was going to be like this like really like weird kind of very heavy situation about the infidelity in these sex parties, but it would just be like this guy that doesn't belong there, like kind of freaking out about
idea.
It. Yeah, it's great. It's so much better.
I also read that Steve Martin was supposed to play the lead in Days of Thunder.
Really?
Yeah, no, yeah. I made that up because that would be weird.
I know, but I played along. I yes-ended, and then you fucking dropped the ball.
You didn't yes-end. You just yes.
He knew you were joking, okay, the whole time. He was just playing along with you.
I was playing along with you. That's the thing. Yeah.
No, he knew.
Yeah.
Steve's of Thunder.
I didn't really want $20. Steve's I was just like, Thunder. It would be really funny if I asked for $20.
Have you met Steve Martin?
Yes.
What was that like? Was he nice to you? He's very shy, right?
He's super nice.
Oh, man.
I was on a show of his.
Which show?
Called The Downer Channel.
Oh, The Downer Channel, of course.
I just thought about this the other day. I auditioned in a room in an office, and going back to my performance art, you're three characters. You know how you go for a sketch. I did a performance art piece. And at that time, that woman, Cindy Margolis, was like, do you remember her?
Yeah.
Before the internet was...
She was the number one downloaded girl on the internet.
So I had a character that where I stuffed my bra and had like, I don't even remember what the gist of it was. It was funny. I can't explain it to you, but where it was her talking, and then by the end of it, I've unstuffed it and I'm like, I'm not her. And I did that weird performance art piece in front of him and got the job.
Wow. I totally get that because, I mean, that's when you look at what he was doing as a stand-up, it was this kind of characterized performance art piece.
Interesting.
And he probably totally
used his own personality in some ways, and then in other ways it was just like an abstract.
But I think there was a real comment on the state of performance and pop culture and like where things were at was the whole like wild and crazy guy, I think was the wild and crazy guy thing. And so he probably had tons of people coming to me like, hey, here's this really big crazy character and here's a lot of punchlines and a lot of jokes. And you're doing this thing that's, you know, that breathes and is like really more of I totally think not knowing C. Martin at all, why he would, as a not expert in this field.
Chris just building his case to get him on the podcast.
Yeah, no, I don't think I could have C. Martin on the podcast.
You can do anything you want.
I don't think I don't.
Like Doc Brown says, put your mind to it.
You can do anything.
I'm gonna call him right now. Why don't you think you could have him on?
Because.
What would you say to him about his, what were you saying about how you think it was an expression of the times?
Because, you know, it was a period of time when like Vegas acts were exploding and the whole idea of like comedy was like the mover and the shaker and the, hey, I'm this guy. Hey, everybody.
Right.
You know, hey, isn't comedy great? Hey, it's kind of what we do when we do like the morning zoo kind of radio, right. Like that as a performing entity. Cause I think you would just come out of the 60s where comedy was migrating from like really swanky nightclubs or like really cool coffee shops into the 70s where everything just kind of got a little soulless and dirty and not as, you know, just not as real. And I think that was his sort of way to characterize that. But I would be afraid to have him on because I know he doesn't want to talk about comedy and I'd be happy to talk to him about bluegrass, but I think it would probably be one of those interviews where
it would be the Chris Farley show.
It would be the Chris Farley show.
And then he
might not want to say that much. And then we just stare at each other. And then I would probably break down and go, I've just ruined this moment with this guy that I idolize.
I'll save it.
Right.
Just talk about modern art.
So this art's pretty modern. Tell me about that, Steve. So that's, I actually am that, like, he's probably the number one guy that I think I don't know if I will ever actually really pursue in any real way to have on the podcast, because
so he's number one, like, above Vladimir Putin or something.
Yeah, he's way above Putin.
Wait, I want to pick your brain for one more second about him and his comedy act. His book where he describes doing all of
Born Standing Up
shows over and over, doing the same thing for, like, nobody and memorizing that. Mm-hmm. Do you think he was consciously doing a comment on, or that was just coming out of him? And also, like, only half of those things are jokes. Like, a lot of them are just weird performance things that he kept doing until the audience came along with him.
And don't you feel like you do the same thing? Do you feel like you're a joke writer, or do you feel like, I feel like you do the same thing where you kind of build these pieces and then the audience finds the places where they're funny, rather than, like, you, I don't think you specifically hammer people over the head with the jokes.
No, but neither do you.
I feel like I do. I feel like
you hammer it.
I fucking hammer it. I just get in there and hammer that shit. No, but I just think that, you know, I mean, maybe he wasn't consciously doing it. Maybe it
I do have long sections where people are not with me, and I've always or like, but my sort of downfall as what I've realized is people get uncomfortable because I have a quality where they're listening to me and then they're like, oh, you know, it's almost like, is she okay? Or like, what's wrong with her? Or someone looking to the person.
What's your John? What's your John Corbett story?
Oh, God. Where I worked at the Hard Rock Cafe, and I went up to the table and was like, can I take your drink order? And I was recognizing him and thinking, is that really him? In my mind, he's the hot DJ.
Northern Exposure is way on top at that point.
And I was and already working at the Hard Rock Cafe was kind of putting me in a weird... You sell t-shirts at the table. You know that, right?
You give them
an order form and you sell t-shirts at the table.
So coming from
the indie coffee house... when I go up there, I'm going to have to be like, would you like to try a rock and roll chili? There's
that must have been...
beans and two kinds of meat and rock and roll right in the chili.
That must have been so insane for you, having come from, like, that to me is just sort of symbolizes, like, why people in San Francisco are like, fucking never go to LA. Like, you're working at an indie coffee shop.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, you know, I'm just expression and poetry. And then you come down to LA to pursue this thing that you love, and that fucking Hard Rock Cafe in the most salesy kind of.
You got to burn them and turn them to make some money, though, friends. Even if you want to make a minimal amount of money.
Where was the Hard Rock Cafe?
It was on the Beverly Center.
Oh.
It was right in the.
At the end of the stories, he asked me if I'm retarded. He asked me if I have Down syndrome.
Like,
because I'm making
as an insult?
I think, looking back on it, that he felt some attitude from me that I didn't know I was giving him, which was also happened to me all the time because I don't have a personality where I'm like, hey guys, how are you? See, I can't just like normally be like, hey Chris, how's it going?
Yeah.
Maybe I can more now than ever, but there was always a thing where people are like, wait, like a misfiring.
Are you fucking with me?
Can't you just be friendly and say hi? And the answer is no, I cannot.
That's true. Neil Mahoney, a good friend of ours, he still like gets anxiety about it whenever you're in the same, we're in the same room as you, where he's like, man, I can't handle it. Like, why? He's all, remember like 10 years ago where someone invited us over to Mary Lynn's place? And like it turned out we weren't invited. And then we sat in a dark room when everyone was in the kitchen that only sat the amount of people that were invited over.
Really?
Yeah.
That sounds terrible.
Where was that?
It was, I think you were living in Los Feliz. Did you ever live in Los Feliz?
You guys sat in the dark room?
There was like a dining room with like bench seats on either side of the table. And then there was like just like a living room right next to it where the lights weren't on.
Are you sure that was my house?
It was you, or it might've been Karen or CJ Arabia. I'm not sure who it was, but it was, but like when, for some reason,
I'm not going to take the blame for this.
Yeah, Neil puts it onto you. sees you, he's like, and then she looked at us and like, we should have just left, man. We should have left that night, man. Like he still gets worked up over it.
I'm going to tell Neil that his name came up and Marilyn was like, ugh, don't ever invite that guy over.
Yeah,
I didn't, to be honest. He'll just show up.
Put him in the dark living room. Oh, it's the greatest story. If I had that kind of power. Yeah. Oh, those two?
It was a thing where nobody everyone was sitting around a table and there was no extra room and no extra seats and two extra guys.
That gives me so much fucking agita just thinking about it.
By the way, I don't think you can ever ask someone where you go, did he ask you that as an insult if you had Down syndrome? I don't think you could ever ask someone if they have Down syndrome and be like, no, it's a compliment.
Well, yeah, no, but like, it's like, hey, before I say anything
mean. No, I know what you mean. It's like,
was he trying to like... You
the
know.
Answer is yes, but he was trying to be clever about it.
Yeah.
He was trying to neg you so you'd go out with him.
I am with Neil. If that happened to me 10 years, I would hold that sort of feeling.
Well, that if I had had any tendrils of like wanting to go back to that time, that story just put the nail in the coffin. Like people hanging out at a table and nobody like moving their chairs. Like... talking over each other.
Oh, it's like my biggest fear. That's why I don't go to people's houses.
Yeah, when I saw the movie Adaptation and they were having the conversation where it's like, you know, one of the twins was like, it's like, you never understood why people were making fun of you. He's like, no, I heard him. I just didn't care. I was always like, oh, that was like when me and Neil would be hanging out in the comedy scene where it's like he would be like, no one wants us to be here and you don't care. I'm like, yeah, but it's fun hanging out and look at people. Like, I don't care. And then like, he would always.
But now I kind of love that guys talk like that because I thought it was just girls that talk about stuff like that.
No. Well, most of me and my guy friends are pretty girls. Like, yeah, pretty much gabbing out clothes and feeling uncomfortable at places.
I remember being at Bumbershoot in like 2001, I think. And we were all in the same hotel. You were there and I think Barrett was there and Cross and a bunch of people, the Bumbershoot festivals in Seattle. And you were dating. Can I say who you were dating? Do you care?
I don't care.
It was John Bryan. So John Bryan was
there. Why did you not say that?
I don't know because I don't know if you're supposed to bring it up or not.
I'm going
to
start crying.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, this is way worse than that time Neil showed up at your apartment and wasn't supposed to be
No,
there.
It's not.
I'm married with a child, by the way.
Yeah. we're all hanging out. And I think that's right around the time when I was like, oh, I have a little bit of a crush on Mary Lynn. And then we're all eating and you were up in the room. And then John Bryan.
Why didn't we ever date?
But because you were dating John Bryan at the time.
Oh, that's why you didn't want to say his name.
And John Bryan got up to the table and he was like, well, guys, I'm going upstairs to kick it Mary Lynn style. And we're all just like, oh, what does that mean?
What does that mean?
That sounds sexy in a way.
He's
but
gonna
I
sit in a dark room while she's in the kitchen.
There was only one chair. There was only one chair and then not enough room for him. There was not enough room for him.
Sit over there. Well, who is it now? What do you want now?
Sorry.
Oh, so true.
Everyone was
right
leaving the bar.
But you
just suddenly want to play an Ice Queen in something. Damn it.
You,
I am playing an Ice Queen in something. Safety Not Guaranteed in theater soon.
What?
Yep. I play a total bitch.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that looks like a great movie.
I was improvising as a hateful bitch as they said cut. And the director actually had to cut me off because I was talking to like a table of employees. And I was like, what idea do you have? What shitty idea? And he was like, Mary Lynn, cut. Like, stop yelling at the person.
My name is not Mary Lynn.
It's so much fun.
That looks like a great movie. I'm looking forward to it.
I heard it's really good. Yeah. I tried to go to a screening of it the other night.
No one let you in?
Well, we had the wrong time. I had the wrong time. I put it in wrong on my eye calendar. I had
Neil
it at 8 o'clock.
Was
it was really
screening.
At 7 o'clock. Yeah. Why would you have a screening at 8 o'clock? So we drove across town to Culver City, but then we had a good shabu shabu instead.
Oh, you got a good shabu shabu in Culver
City.
Then
I drove into and the security guard was like, what are you doing here? Don't drive in here. And I was like, got the babysitter and the screening. And it was like, which screening? And I said, I'm not guaranteed. He was like, yeah, it's already started. You can sit here for a minute and collect yourself because I get because I shared my story. Instead of saying, like, I'm in the dark room and you're around the table, I said, let's connect, and I want you to know what happened tonight. And then he felt our pain, but I didn't do it in a sarcastic way. I just let him in. I said, yeah, that we just missed our screening, but then it ended up good because we had some good food.
Shabba shabba.
Yeah,
how did you went out and cooked your own food?
Yep.
How did 24 come about? Did you audition for that?
Kick it Mary Lynn style.
Kick it Mary Lynn style. I'm going to go upstairs and kick. And then, you know, I think there was a part of it was like, God damn it, I wish I could kick it Mary Lynn style. Like we were, I think we were all kind of like
Chris Hardwick
style. I think we were all kind of a little jealous. And I think I felt like John Bryan, who is a very sweet guy. I mean, I didn't date him, so I don't know how sweet he was, but he was always very sweet. It was a very, I think, an unintentional, uncharacteristic, almost almost like a cocksure sort of a, hey, I'm going to go upstairs and totally get on this, you know. I don't know.
Probably him trying to be that.
Right.
It's a weird thing to say about your girlfriend. Like if like
he's
you know,
trying to say something.
No,
cool.
I think he was just being silly and fun and funny. Like I don't think there was any, you know, I'm gonna put this in that kind of like it wasn't. No. It didn't. It was just more like, hey, I'm gonna go up and be with my girlfriend. But
yeah,
it just,
and he was trying to say be like clever or silly, and then it kind of came out.
And then he picked up the chopsticks and then improvised a song off the beer
and
bottles.
And everybody forgot.
It was his magic power that everyone was like in
he's
trance.
Like, forget when I said "Kick It, Mary Lindsay." That was weird, right?
This song was called "Kick It, Mary Lindsay." This podcast should be called Kick It Mary Lynn Style should be the name of a thing that you do.
I'm uncomfortable. I love that. I'm going to steal it.
He's not going to remember. He'll never remember.
No, about the fact that, never mind.
not about the fact that you're good. Are you done? Well, before we get to 24, are you sort of, because your husband's not a performer.
No.
But you dated comedians, you dated musicians.
He has a broken foot right now, so he can't really work, and I have to drive him everywhere. He has a foot cast. I just dropped him off at the Arclight to watch Prometheus. And as we were driving down Vine, he goes, I kind of don't want to go now.
Oh, poor little guy.
Do you want to come to the podcast with me? Husband and wife style?
He totally would have been invited to the podcast.
He didn't answer.
He's a,
I know you wouldn't care.
He's a motorcycle guy, right? He rides a motorcycle.
He's a Harley Davidson man.
Yeah, I just remember once. I don't remember where it was, but I remember we were someplace and
he is the son of anarchy.
He showed up. I remember he walked in with like a leather jacket and a helmet once at some place you were at. And
he did not.
I think he did.
He did not.
Yeah, and then he just pushed me aside. Said, get away, dweeb.
He did.
Yeah.
Get away, dweeb. Smashed a beer bottle.
I'm here to kick it, Mary Lynn.
Do you like dating? And not? I mean, you're not dating. I mean, like now you're legally dating as a married couple. Do you like not being with a performer? Like was that kind of exhausting? Is it weird to be with someone who's
I love it.
Who's probably pretty centered and normal.
There was a long breaking in period, especially since I got pregnant very quickly. So it was like I had to unravel all of my craziness in that department and realize, oh, some people don't want to get up and argue about God at 7 in the morning. That's me who's angry and are angry for no reason. That's all in here. And a lot of things I would get mad about, he's just like, I don't even know what you mean. And I was like, oh, boy. Wow. It's interesting.
I love this. You told me, I don't remember if you told it on stage or if you just told me. I think maybe you just told me this story. Maybe you told it on stage. But it was, you got pregnant, not necessarily a planned pregnancy right away where you said, hey, I want to have kids. But it happened because that's how bodies work. And you told the most amazing story about breaking the news to your parents. That I wish you would tell.
How does it go? I waited to tell them because I try not to talk to them so much about stuff. And I was visiting Michigan, and I waited until the very last second, like I was on my way to the airport, and I had like my backpack and my as if I was waiting on John Corbett, uncomfortable face. But instead of my mom asking me if I had Down syndrome, she said, insert what my mother's, I said, something happened. And my mom was like, what? And then my dad sort of sighed and looked forward at the television. And that's how I knew I had their attention. And I was like, I'm pregnant. And I was so scared to tell them, like scared of the repercussions and that I was going to be in trouble. And then my mom jumped up and like hugged me. I think she high-fived me and then hugged me. And then that's when I realized, oh, I'm 37 and I'm not 16. And I'm actually not in trouble right now. I'm an adult and I can do stuff like that. So
you have a good job and you can make them.
A good job. I own a house. Which is a side, very personal note, as I think that is probably the reason why I let it happen. Like I did not get preg on purpose, but I think there was a part of me that unconsciously was like, I'm okay with this.
Yeah.
But in my like waking life, I thought I was going to be in trouble.
Also,
by my parents.
Unprotected sex is great.
Guys, are we taking it there?
I mean, seriously.
What's
happening? Let's kick it, Mary Lynn style.
Wait a minute. Let us not turn kick it, Mary Lynn style into a euphemism for unprotected sex.
No. It's just talking trash
kids,
about sex and shit.
Kids, right? Don't kick it, Mary Lynn style. Use a condom.
Parents,
Chris, why are you sitting in a chair
Mary
backwards?
Lynn style with your kids.
And delighted.
Damn it.
So me and this girl were kicking a Mary Lynch style.
Whoa, yeah. Bareback?
Yeah, totally, totally, man. And then
sexual commando,
and I yeah. totally thought I was gonna get pregnant.
Yeah,
and then we kicked it Mary Lynn style again, and she yeah. is pregnant.
Yeah, so. She, now she is pregnant, and the baby is Down syndrome. Oh.
It's okay to it's okay to kick it Mary Lynn style on the butt because you can't.
Drumming circle.
I love having
Man,
you
I
on
wish
the
your
show.
Husband
it's
came.
So much fun.
I know.
He did.
Really
I so was it you accepted it after that moment? Was that the sort of moment with your parents where you were like, ah, I am actually okay with this?
Yes. Yes. And then there was an odd moment with my parents where my mom kind of was trying to insist that I could do it by myself. And I was like, no, we're actually going to he and I were going to do it together. And so that was, you know, another transition because my mom was like, okay, if that works out, like,
that's weird.
Jeez.
Well, I think because she,
right.
I hadn't talked about him. She hadn't met him. It was very much.
She knew about the motorcycle.
She knew about the helmet, the way he carried it.
I just sauntered into the room, all eyes on him.
But yeah, because, you know, it was very precarious, but that's what made it so much fun.
And now you feel okay with everything.
Oh, yeah, I feel great.
Yeah, I know.
Super lucky.
How old is your son now? He's going to be like 3 or 4?
He's 3 and a half. Yeah. Yeah.
Did that thing happen that everyone always blabs about where they're like, I didn't think I wanted kids, but I had a kid and it fucking changed. Like, everything's amazing.
Yes. Of course it happened. Come on. Can't talk to you guys about that. You don't get it. You're not in the club. You'll never get it until you kick it Mary Lynn style tonight. And then get back to me, and then we'll talk about everything. But we're not going to.
I wonder if I'm if I'm with a lady, and then right at the moment at the end, I'm like, I just kicked it Mary Lynn style. Then I try to high-five her. Is she gonna be like, please put your hand down and get off of me and leave?
No, the illustration. I can't believe I was the one that brought it up again. Let's forget that term.
Okay, I take it back.
It is pretty.
That's sexy, all people
sexy.
Will tweet at the four of us for the Lord. First week this podcast is
up. I'm curious what would have happened if we had dated, and then we're just lying around one night, and I'm like, yep, this is kicking it Mary Lynn style, and you're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Chris, you brought someone else to tears now.
Who did you
finally
bring to tears?
Finally.
What if you brought Steve Martin to tears if you had him on?
That would horrify me. Great. He did actually. He did an interview at the 92nd Street Y with Charlie Rose, and at the end of it, he's telling a story about this someone who he seems like the sweetest, most sensitive guy in the world, which is why I think he comes off very guarded. Uh-huh. He's telling this story about how someone sent him a letter about that they were something he did connected the father and the son in a certain way, and he chokes up and he starts crying, and it's always, you know, it's like, oh, he's a human being, but for me, I was like, Steve Martin, what can I do?
What have you done, Charlie Rose?
How can I make it better?
Oh, interesting. So you weren't actually even feeling the emotion of his story. You were just like, oh my gosh, is Steve Martin
I was
okay?
feeling the emotion of the story. And then, yeah, and then I just wanted to like, I just want to make it better. And I couldn't because I will never. I've told the story before.
You should open up with your interview, which we're gonna make happen, right, guys?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With, I just want you to feel better. I've wanted to hold you
for so long.
As long as I can remember.
Well, it's you know, Ed Helms does the bluegrass situation thing, that like bluegrass situation where he'll do like a bluegrass festival every year and Steve plays at it. And the one or two times that I've done it, I've been there on the day that Steve Martin wasn't there, and I've always been weirdly relieved. Because I don't know if I could perform with Steve Martin watching.
I'm sure he was relieved too.
I'm sure he was very.
I want to make this happen.
I don't feel comfortable with it.
Yeah, having a kid changes you.
Do you feel like now that, do you think it's just, you know, just with time and experience and age that you're more comfortable with everything? Or was it having a kid that kind of made you more?
Both, but probably mostly the kid. The kid will just take your shit and shake it up and throw it out, and you can't. Yeah, you think you're like you know, you have responsibilities or worries. It's nothing. Oh, it's nothing until you have a little tiny human being. And that's the greatest and worst part about it. That's what you've heard, right?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
It's the hardest job you'll ever love.
Well, I mean, because it takes you, it pushes you to the brink.
Whose wedding did I see you at right after you had the baby? Was it a wedding? It was downtown at Union Station.
It was Scott Krulop's wedding.
Yeah. Yes, it was Scott Aukerman's wedding.
Yeah.
And I saw you, and I was like, how's it going? And you're like, I don't sleep.
Oh, I didn't I didn't even like the baby at that point. I didn't like it for the first 3 to 6 months to a year.
To 3 to 4 years.
Currently.
And then what do you think it was that changed?
It slept more.
That's part of it. It wears you down. And then you realize, you know it intellectually that it's profound and important, but it forces you to be in that place in like every minute. And then you're like, oh. And the more you do it, the more you are like, this is pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, particularly for comedians who I think are somewhat inherently selfish just because of that career path where it's just like, everyone focus on me.
Yeah.
And so we're so used to coming and going as we please, doing whatever we want, not doing what we don't want. And then all of a sudden,
And when you're reminded of that, like, oh, I have to fucking do this now. And that voice comes in your head.
Yeah.
And then every day you see reflected back at you what kind of an asshole you are, because you're like, oh, well, they don't. And I mean, I still have like the transition if I've been out doing stuff all day or working and I'm going into going home. But you like sort of get used to it. And then I'm like, OK, I have to like change because I'm out in the world and doing stuff. And then you kind of transition into like being home, and it's the best.
Well, that's nice.
And then he's like, you know, gotta go poop. Can you come with me? He wiped my butt, and I'm like,
but what does your son say?
Hey, Matt!
Kick it, Mary Lynn Shaw! Hey.
That's the transition between sketches, where it's just you, just like, fist pumping.
I was thinking it also meant kick it at Mary Lynn style also means I'll wipe your butt for you.
Wow. This is a lot of...
You're going to have to wipe my butt, Mary Lynn style.
Hey, was it a messy one? Wipe your own butt.
I'm told the Inuits have 47 different meanings for kick it Mary Lynn style. Yeah. Their language is it's a very subtextual, subtextually complex language. Oh, you were great on, we did the same mashup, episode of mashup, too.
Oh, yeah, that was
really
fun.
Did you shoot your sketches yet?
I did.
Which ones did they use?
The one where I talk about how I just want to be hot, and I sit next to a supermodel on the plane, and I'm like, oh, I'm a supermodel. And I talk about how girls that are porn sexy take off their glasses and like suck on them, or just like weird shit that super sexy girls do.
Yeah.
And you know, Charlotte, TJ's girlfriend, she like played that, like illustrated that, but she was like fucking a pair of sunglasses. And I was like, wow, you're really illustrating my joke right now.
Don't you? There's some sort of weird thing with the like what we perceive to be sexy in our culture, because 50% of what we perceive to be sexy are things that babies do. And that to me, like,
go on.
Oh, I see, like sucking on glasses.
Look at me. You know, like, there's a weird sort of a, I don't know what I'm, you know, like, there's a weird kind of a thing that we perceive as sexy. But if you really break it down, it's like, that's what babies do.
Yeah. Why? So sexy doesn't necessarily like translate to sex very well. It's like you see a stripper on a pole, like, no guy's going, man, I want her to swing around on my dick. You know, no one, like, that's not a thing.
No, you're not doing it right.
What?
No, that's how it works.
That's really how it works?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, that's why
it's not the same
brass
thing,
penis installed.
Yeah.
Because I hate strip clubs anyway.
Yeah,
they're just gross.
I completely disagree with your baby theory.
Really?
Yes.
All of the, like, the pulling the lip and they're like, meow.
No, who's that
sexy
for?
Yeah, but that's all, like, really trite. But if you look at, like, real intimacy, you guys, which I think we're having here today on this podcast.
You've really grown up.
Thank you. Like, there's that, like, being sensual with someone is very tender. You could relate that to a baby, but you don't have to go so far to be cartoonish about it.
No, I think I was just thinking more
sexy
in terms
times
of...
times are really...
I was thinking more in terms of the way it's expressed in media, like in magazines and, you know, like, because you were talking about, like, the sexy girl chewing on her sunglasses.
I'm like disagreeing with you, and I have a whole bit written about it.
About exactly what you're disagreeing
with. At the end of the day, what's sexy to me is the guy's credit card and his Harley Davidson. Am I right?
Right.
And his diamond floors.
No annual fee.
What's up?
My diamond
floors. Hey, what's your limit on your Amex?
It's unlimited.
Before this goes any further.
Platinum means unlimited.
Oh, yeah.
The sky's the limit. How are you enjoying? Do you like the comedy clubs? Are you enjoy? Are people coming out and expecting to see Chloe?
Yeah, man. I got really into it. I'm kind of. If you would have talked to me 3 weeks ago, I would have been like, "Oh my gosh, I totally have an act and it's working, and I'm really into it." And then like, you go home and you're like, "Why? I don't want to leave my house." And then another day passes, and I'm like, "I haven't been in the clubs in 2.5-3 weeks," and I'm. Have no desire to at this moment, but I will be.
Are you touring there. The country or just doing Los Angeles stuff? Around?
No. I did Brea for the first time, which I was really excited about because I have an act and I deliver it and I pause and I have the jokes and stuff. But people still and I address the Chloe thing at the top of it, but people are still looking at me like, what is she doing here?
Right.
Like I have whole jokes about it.
Yeah. You didn't really audition for that for 24. Back to the earlier question, they just sort of like the creator of the show or someone was like, "I want you to be in this."
Yeah, it was Joel Surdo who created 24. He saw me in that movie Punch Drunk Love, directed by Paul Thomas Anderson,
mm-hmm.
and where I played the overbearing sister to Adam Sandler, and he liked.
I thought Adam Sandler played the overbearing sister to Adam Sandler.
True.
You're thinking of Punch Drunk Love and Jill.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was a totally different movie.
See why you guys work together. Kicking it, Mary. I gotta stop saying that.
So he saw you in that movie and said you should be in the show.
Yes, exactly.
That is a really sweet way.
It's amazing. He goes, "I'm gonna write a part for you," and I was like, "No way, that'll never happen." But this is like the nicest meeting ever because you just like any acknowledgement. But then you think because the way the business is, it won't like pan out, and then it totally did.
That's pretty sweet.
It's amazing.
And then some.
And then I thought I was going to get fired after 4 shows and then 6 shows. And it was, went on for a long time.
And then you've done
four
talk
hours
show.
Or 6 hours.
Nice one.
Hey,
sorry,
nice.
I'm sorry.
That was using the universe
Shut
of the
up.
Show. It was using. I'm complimenting you. Don't get
Learn
all John Corbett on me.
Learn how to be intimate and sexual.
Do you want to host stuff or what do you want to do?
You want to
do a podcast?
Well, I was going to start doing a podcast just because like everyone's podcast that I do, I'm like so slow on the uptake that because then when people listen and they come see you live, they already kind of know what you're about.
Absolutely.
And what a delightful way to
make
connect
money.
With people.
We've talked
and
about
make
this.
Millions and millions of dollars.
Millions of podcast dollars coming via wire.
But then I did a talk show pilot and had a blast doing
With
that.
Hugh Fink, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I'm scared because sometimes I'm like, I just want to get another acting job. I don't know.
I think it'd be a fun thing for you to do on this. We've talked about this. I would, I would totally produce the show or put the show out for you, which if you know.
Maybe she doesn't want that, then you're being weird right now.
You're saying that on the air?
We've already talked about it, Matt.
How does it work? How do you do it?
Well, we just produce it for you, and then all you have to do is show up and talk, and then that's it.
Okay.
It just makes it really easy. This will be like the date thing that never happened.
Yes.
Produce the thing.
All right. Oh, I kind of want to talk to like actors about their career and then about being parents. But then I only don't want to like I wanted to call it Studio City. And it would just be about like people I know that were in Studio City and they would come over to my garage. Like people that are my age.
Not,
my parents.
That's not a terrible idea.
That is a fucking
Thank
great
you,
idea.
Right? Because I just saw Angela Kinsey this morning and she's my neighbor and she's also a mom. And I'd be like, talk to her about acting and then about being a mom. And then Tom Kinney, I think, is my other neighbor.
Yeah.
I would talk to him about being
So you have Tom and Jill. You have Tom and Jill.
Exactly. And I wanted to put a note in their mailbox, but I wasn't sure which house was theirs.
Blanket the street.
It's the one that has the SpongeBob face on the garage.
Here, yes. Here, don't bother me. And then he acts all like aggravated. You're like, but you have a SpongeBob picture on your.
Here, here, don't bother me. Sounds like an NPR show. Here, here, don't bother me. Come over to my show. What do you want? Why can't you leave me alone? You invited me. I don't give a shit.
All right.
Please.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it.
All right.
I feel nervous to talk about it.
Well, you don't have to. I am here for you.
Thanks.
Whatever.
Chris Hardwick.
Whatever you want, Marilyn. Rice Cub.
Can we do it on a spaceship?
Yes.
All right.
Sponsored by Virgin Galactica. Nope.
I've been reading about space books to my son, like what is Earth and what is and the planets and stuff like that. It's pretty cute. He's like, which one's the coldest one? Which one is the cold one? Like, is that Uranus?
Did you have to explain the downgrade of Pluto to him?
I did. It was in the book. I didn't know about it until I read this book.
And that must be a weird thing for a kid who's you're just explaining the concept of planets to him and be like, this one is not that thing I just said anymore.
Yeah, I think he's going to start thinking about it not as a planet right from the get-go.
Growing up that way, I don't want to live.
I know.
It's just like, this thing in the Kuiper belt, you guys.
When I was young, it was a planet. I could count on it.
Who wants an 8-planet solar system?
Stupid. So stupid.
8.5?
I'm okay with it.
I guess I'm okay with it, too.
Yeah.
We're never going to go
to
Pluto.
We're all okay with it.
Now it's the largest thing in the Kuiper Belt. So it used to be the tiniest planet.
I feel like
kind of getting an upgrade.
Pre-mom Mary Lynn would not have been okay with it. But mom Mary Lynn...
You're so right.
Really,
you're starting to get the gist of this thing, Tris.
Has really helped expand your comfort zone with planetary classification systems. It's the one part of motherhood you never expect. But probably the most rewarding, I think. Right?
Very rewarding.
Is there anything you want to plug before we wrap this up?
Dirtywork.com.
Dirtywork.com.
Web series.
Yep.
Directed by Eric Appel.
Yes.
Who's great.
New father.
Yes. Oh, new father too. Yeah.
New dad. Him and Johanna had a baby.
Nice.
I've had their baby present in the back of my car for weeks. Haven't had a chance.
Do you want to give a bottle of Hennessy to an infant?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the plan. It'd just be really funny until, you know, they can drink it.
Yeah.
Or I'll drink it.
Right. Sometimes when I have friends who have new babies, I'll call and just ask to speak. They'll be like, oh, hi, can I talk to Keith? Just whoever the baby's name is, because I think I'm being funny. Like, now you
know,
you
get
to tell him.
Keith?
Yeah, no. I'm just picking, that was the
great
first
name
that came into my head.
You're going to make a great father.
I'm not 100% sure that that's ever going to happen.
Christopher Hardwick.
What?
No, I know. I didn't want it to happen.
I don't know. I don't know.
I'm a lady and I didn't want it to happen.
I just don't know. I don't know. It's really more about being aware of how I am with the world. And I don't know if I would be.
Oh, no.
I don't know if I would be a good parent.
How are you with the world?
Well, just like super focused on work and nonstop. Right. And I lead a fairly selfish existence. Everything I do revolves around something that I'm working on in some way. And I don't know if I would. I don't want to be the kind of parent who's like, yeah, 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 dad'll be in there in a minute. I have to answer these emails. You know, like, I feel like if you have a kid, you should really devote a large portion of your life to making sure that that person's life is good.
But if you ever did want to take a break from work, having a kid would be a good excuse.
That's true.
But.
And the break is so much like work, you wouldn't notice. Say,
But I.
Dad!
No, I don't.
Dad!
You'll get there.
Matt, Dad, and Jonah, Dad.
Chris, when you get home, you're going to have a baby there.
Jesus Christ!
That's why we work this.
You'll have kids before
today.
I will, I think.
I don't know. Deanna doesn't really want to have kids.
Okay.
How long have you guys been together?
I probably will.
A little over 2 years.
Nice coverage. She doesn't want to have kids?
No.
I didn't really either. I'm not. I understand.
See,
I don't
it's
mean
funny.
To
every, and every time, like we tell people, they're like, "Well, when you guys gonna have kids?" We're like, "Ah, no." And then they'll go, "Just wait." You know, it's like very condescending. Like Fred Belford yesterday. He's like, "Just wait a couple years; it'll happen."
Do you have unprotected sex?
Yes.
Is she on the pill?
Yes.
Does Fred have a baby?
No, we kick it Maryland style all the time.
I'm so sorry.
Primarily.
I'm sorry I brought that up because you know what's gonna happen now, Maryland, on Twitter.
It's now a thing.
On Twitter now, There's going to be a lot of like, I wish I could kick it, Mary Lynn. Oh, you're going to have to suffer that for like a week. And then in a month, it'll be a little more sporadic and then you won't. And then it'll go away.
Oh, Lord.
But I would really register kickitmarylynnstyle.com right now when you leave. When you
and
leave.
That should also be the name of the podcast that you do.
Kick it, Mary Lynn Style.
That's it. High fives.
Yes,
all around.
Because technically, if it's about parenting and motherhood, there is an aspect of unprotected sex that's involved
that's
in that.
That's what I'm talking about. Honestly, my podcast was going to be called Studio City, and then I changed. It was going to be unprotected sex and other stories of blah 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 blah. Because you want people to
kick
it,
Mary Lynn Style.
Yeah.
It was also being called The Edge of Motherhood, and I was like, oh, I hate that because I don't really want to talk about being a mom because no one's going to click on a thing about a mom.
Moms will.
Yeah, but I'm a mom and I wouldn't.
That's true. Shit.
I want moms too. Secretly.
Yeah, you can always end the show. It's like, I want to thank my guest, Tom Kenny, for kicking it Mary Lynn Style.
And then Jill's going to be like, you did what?
Yeah.
It's like, no. It's the name of the show now. It's not. It's not what is normally the very widely understood, collectively agreed upon euphemism.
No, the end of every episode is a you leave, and then the guest you had just goes, well, I got to go kick it Mary Lynn Style, and then they walk out of the room, and that's the end of the podcast.
Please don't be upset at me for bringing that up. Are you okay with it?
I love hate it.
I'm so sorry.
Why are people laughing at me?
It was just one of those stories. It's just always been, you know, like in the stuck. It just popped in the back of my head from years ago.
You know, that's why people tune in. Chris,
I don't know.
That's why they love you.
I don't know. But
you'll bring it out.
You'll
pull out a story.
Sort of. A little bit. But it is amazing to have you on the podcast. And I am thrilled that things are going well. And I don't know. We should hang out.
Come on.
Not in a datey way, but just like.
Let's regular style.
We'll kick it regular style.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Enjoy your burrito, everybody.
Anyway.
Is it? Right? Now I'm going to just reach over and turn this off. Everybody just take it down a minute.
Doing an awful lot of space work.
I don't.
For a podcast.
When you get caught between the moon and the but it's true. When you come between the moon and me.
Zoe, you went up.
That you can do the best that you can do.
Kick it, Marilyn Stone.
That's your theme.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast was brought to you by IFC. Bunk, the game show, airs 10:30 every Friday night following Comedy Bang Bang on IFC.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.